the fact, probably one of the earliest things we learn in school about the new additions and changes that we make to the tefillin and Seder Tshuva is the Hosafa of Shir HaMalos Mimamakim Krasich Hashem that's inserted in the Siddur at the conclusion of Pesukah Zimra between Yishtabach and Baruch Hu. So where does this come from? So it's found actually in the Minhagim of the Arizal, and it was popularized by the Hasidim as well, even though it's not really Minhag Ashkenaz, but the Magen Avraham quotes it from the Arizal, and that has become popularized in communities all over the world, even those without strongly rooted Minhagim in the Ksavim of the Arizal. And it happens to be the Magen Avraham argues, he quotes the Arizal, and he argues with this practice, and he says it's really not correct. It's actually a surprise to have anything following Yishtabach before Kaddish. Normally, a person's not supposed to speak. A person's not supposed to speak between Yishtabach and Yotzer. That's, as a result, very unusual to find something inserted in the Siddur that goes in that spot. And he, therefore, rules that one should not say it altogether. Now, the Dogma Ravava, which is a commentary in the side of Shulchan Aruch, right there next to the Magen Avraham in the margin. Dogma Ravava was written by the same author of the Note of Yehuda, Becheskel Landau, author of the Tzlach on Shas as well. So he defends this practice of the Arizal that has become popular by quoting a statement of the Lavush in the name of the Marshal that appears in Siman Nun Vav, elsewhere in Aruch Chaim, Pesukah Zimra, that we can be mekel to add things, again, between Yishtabach and Kaddish that are me'in ha'ma'or, that are unique to that time of the year. And the Isser, to be mafsik, is primarily for Dvarim B'Talim, but if it's something unique, that's relevant, so it's okay. And that's what he uses to justify the minhag. Nevertheless, Rav Soloveitchik was against saying it the way that we have it, again, in that spot, particularly between Yishtabach and Kaddish, and therefore did not say Shir HaMalos there, but rather in his shul in Boston, the practice was, I believe, to say Shir HaMalos prior to Yishtabach, to insert that extra perek of Tehillim in Pesukah Zimra itself, rather than saying after Yishtabach. You'll see an interesting discussion about this. Maybe some of you saw in the Beis Medrash. A new Sefer came out just right before the Yom Ne'orayim. I don't know if I can show it to you. It's called Batei Yosef. Batei Yosef is a collection of the Psakim and the Torah following the topics in Shulchan Aruch. Right now, it's only on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Small Kuntres came out, ultimately be published as a book, but includes the Psakim of Soloveitchik and also of Shechter and Rabbi Willig. It's really a tremendous endeavor an undertaking that the Yeshiva has begun to try to collect all the things that are scattered in many different places into one location for the Talmidim of the Yeshiva to have a guide, halacha l'maisa. So it brings over here that the Rav himself held that it should be said before Yishtabach, and on Shabbos he would say it before Nishmas. That's very important. Why should that be so? Because contrary to, I think, a general understanding, people just aren't familiar, doesn't always come up, nafkaminas from this, but there are a few. Nishmas is one long bracha called Birchas Hashir, connected with Yishtabach. During the week, we just say that one paragraph of Yishtabach to conclude the Pesukah de Zimra, but on Shabbos and on Yantif, it actually takes on a longer form from Nishmas straight through Yishtabach. That's why at the Seder, we have a Birchas Hashir also, and in the Haggadah, at the end of Hallel, you also have that continuum from Nishmas that goes all the way to the end, Melech Mulal, Melech Kelcheolamim, the end of, or Melech Mulal B'tish Brachos, as we're normally Messiah Mahalal. But it's one long bracha. One nafkimin would be, let's say, a person is saying Pesukah D'Zimra on Shabbos morning, and they're going quickly through Oz Yashir and so forth, and just by rote, maybe they weren't looking in the Siddur, they went straight from Oz Yashir through to Yishtabach. They forgot to say it altogether. So should they say the Nishmas afterwards, prior to beginning the Birchas Kriyas Shema? And if I'm not mistaken, the Ishei Yisrael brings opinions about this. Maybe Ruchaim Kanievsky holds that a person should say the words of Nishmas afterwards, after concluding Yishtabach. And the other opinion, Rav Shechter holds like this as well, argues and says, no, once you miss Nishmas, you missed it. It would be inappropriate to add Nishmas afterwards because, again, Nishmas is a unit with Yishtabach. So if you concluded Yishtabach, you concluded that unit of Pesukah Zimra, it doesn't make any sense to add in to add in the bracha, to add in the words of Nishmas afterwards, because the unit has been closed, and there's no opportunity to get it back again. You just go by to, okay, you missed Nishmas, you got to get it right next week. But it would not make sense to have it added again at that point. So likewise, Yishtabach is not, Shir Malos is not said after Yishtabach, and the truth is, Rav Shechter Paskins, like the Magen Avraham, all the way, that in the Beis Medrash, in YU, Shir Malos is not said at all. Yesterday morning, we did not say Yishtabach, we did not say Shir Malos after Yishtabach, following Pesukot Zimra on Rosh Hashanah. Okay, but nevertheless, it seems to be that the prevailing custom in Klal Yisrael, they have adopted this Arizal, not like the Magen Avraham. And we say Shir Malos b'mamakim grasich Hashem every morning, this time of year during the Sesame Shuv. So I want to examine just for a moment what that particular inyan of Shir Malos is saying. So there's a lot there about Slicha and Mechila and Bakasha of Bakasha for a Kabar from Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kimcha Slicha l'man tivarei. That has to inspire a certain degree of Yira, because without a Kadosh Baruch Hu to grant Slicha, we really have no hope. Interesting, there's another line there. We can spend a lot of time analyzing the Mizmor. We don't have to. We don't have the time to do it right now. But there's also a line, Nafshi l'Hashem yishomrim l'boker, shomrim l'boker. David HaMelech says, my nefesh, my essence, is from those who are shomer l'boker, those who guard the morning. Right? Simple pshat like that would not really make sense as a pashup pshat. Shomrim l'boker, what does it mean to guard the morning? So shomer and shmira throughout Tanakh has another meaning. You'll often find it in a usage which actually suggests hope and yearning and anticipation. Nafshi l'Hashem yishomrim l'boker. I anticipate the morning. I anticipate the brightness, the clarity, and the light of the geula. We say this time here also levaker bechalo, right? Lachos b'nam Hashem levaker bechalo. Rabbi Lam once explained based on the Radak. We had a kenis on the first day of yeshiva. Everyone together in the Lamport Auditorium, and he said, "Levaka bechol means boker, has the light and a clarity and a freshness of the morning. That's what it means, levaka bechol. So shomrim leboker, waiting for that renewal, for that morning of geula. Shomrim leboker means I'm waiting it. Right? When we say someone is shomer Shabbos, so one meaning, the simple meaning means that he observes Shabbos, he follows all the rules. Shmira usually talks about the los haseis, avoiding malacha, as opposed to zechira, zachus yom shabbos kachsho, which is the positive, the things that I am supposed to do. Shmira is in this on this level an additional layer of meaning, which means I'm anticipating, I'm hoping for Shabbos. A shomer Shabbos is someone who can't wait for Shabbos to start. He waits the whole week till Shabbos comes again, and everything he's doing gears up and looks forward to that day. And Friday morning, you know, he's already preparing. Doesn't wait till the last minute to jump in the shower. He's looking forward anxiously and eagerly for Shabbos. That's a Shomer Shabbos. Where do we see that from? So first we point out that's the Lashon of the Pasuk in Parshas Vayeshev. When Yosef tells his dreams to his brothers, so obviously there's a lot of animosity and they're upset. He goes and tells his father as well. And Vayigar Bo Aviv. Yaakov gives a little bit of a mussar to Yosef. What are you stirring up all this machlokas with your dreams? You know the dreams can't come true anyway. Your mother, Rachel's already dead. How can she come and bow down to you? But the parsha concludes, that episode concludes, Aviv Shomar Es Hadavar. Aviv Shomar Es Hadavar. Yaakov guarded this item, this information. So it could mean that he held it in the back of his head. You know, he put it in his mind. But the Mefarshim, look at Rashi already. The Mefarshim tell us that it means something more. Shomar Es Hadavar, Yaakov was waiting. When exactly is this going to come true? He had an anticipation, he had an excitement, hoping that that the time when Yosef would be the ruler and be the one, the dominant authority amongst the brothers, would express itself, would manifest itself. So the Shemira is an excitement and anticipation. One more mock over this, which so recently again in Rav Nevensal Sefer Yerushalayim B'Mo'adeh on Bein HaMetzarim, shout out for you, Josh, which really took me by surprise, because it's a chiddush, but it's a very exciting chiddush. We know that the Gemara says that a person is going to come to Shemayim and they're going to ask him a series of questions. Great to see you, Yitzi, by the way. Welcome. Klal Yisrael is expected to eagerly look forward to the Geula. Afal pishias mameya, b'chol yom sheyavo. There has to be a person has to be mechakev. Part of our basics of Amuna is that Mashiach is coming, and that we're anxiously waiting for that to happen. We'll be asked when we come to Shemayim. One of the first questions we're going to be asked is, "See, peace of Yeshua, were you looking forward to the Gula, or you know, were you not so excited? You went along, with your business as usual, and if it happens, it doesn't happen. It wasn't something that you were necessarily gearing up for. See, peace of Yeshua, that's the question. Or were you looking forward to it? So how do we know that there's such a mitzvah to look forward to the Gula? Where does it say that? Where is it? We don't really have much mention of Mashiach in Chumash altogether. So where does it come from? So there's a famous statement of the Smag who says that it's really included in the mitzvah of Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Sheretz Yisich, Meretz Mitzrayim, the first one of the Aseret Dibros. That statement of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presentation to us, introducing himself to us at Har Sinai, Anochi, so much of Amun is founded upon that, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I am the one who created the world. This is it. Now you have the basics of what a Jew needs to believe. So included in that, Zuck the Smag, is just like I took you out of Mitzrayim, right? It doesn't say, I am Hashem who created the world. It says, I am Hashem who took you out of Mitzrayim. Just like I took you out of Mitzrayim, I will ultimately take you out of the current goals wherever you find yourself, to the Geula, Shlema, to Eretz Yisrael, with Mashiach. So according to the Smag, that's included in the first one of the Aseret Dibros. Zuck the Nevenzal Chiddush, an unbelievable Chiddush. The Pasuk says, as we're all familiar, we read it on Rosh Chodesh. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe l'emor, daber el bnei Yisrael. Davos bnei Yisrael ve'amarta alehem es korbani lachmi li'ishai reach nichochi tishmeru l'hakriv li b'modo. When we begin the Rosh Chodesh laning, even though it appears right before we talk about Rosh Chodesh, but it's the korban tami that we bring every single day. Korbani lachmi li'ishai reach nichoach, the korban brought in the Mizbeach, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, the korban tamid every single day. Tishmaru lahakrav libamodo. Tishmaru. Guard yourselves to make sure that it is brought at the proper time. Explains of Nevinsal Tishmaru is from that Lashon of Shmir that we mentioned before. Nafshil Hashem Mishom Laboker, Shom Laboker, we're waiting for the Geula. Tishmaru, you should be anticipating and yearning for the time when you can bring the korban tamid every single day. One of the reasons we had a Tanaisim in the summer, the Bein Mitzarim, is because the Bittul of the Tamid on Shavasa B'Tamas, right? That was the end. It was the beginning of the end, but it was also the end of the Karban Tamid, beginning of the end of the Beis HaMikdash, but it was the end of the Karban Tamid, and we're fasting already. That's when we begin the Avelos for the Korban. So Tishmaru Lakrav Libam Odo, not just guard yourself to make sure that it gets done, to bring the Karban Tamid at the proper time, but yearn for it when it's absent, that you're hoping for it to one time come back as well. The mitzvah of Amunah, Tzipis L'Yeshua, that the Mashiach will come rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. But let's focus on the beginning, which is how we know the Mizmor. Shiramalos Mimamakim Krasicha Hashem. So what does that mean? I'm calling out to you, Hashem, Mimamakim, from the depths. What is the idea that we're trying to emphasize when we add these words to our tefillah every single day, following Yishtabach? So, very basic level, probably the way most people understand it, is Mimamakim. Mimamakim from the depths means David HaMelech is describing the state he finds himself in. It's obviously a state of desperation, but perhaps a state of desperation that creates the imagery of what we saw in Rabbeinu Yonah in the beginning of Shar Sheni, when he talks about the motivations, the impetus that can lead a person to do tshuva. Very often, whether it's ideal or not, the motivation that brings a person to tshuva is a desperation of suffering. I know that I'm undergoing pain, misfortune, whatever it happens to be, because of my averos. And therefore, Kadosh Baruch Hu, I'm trying to turn things around, I'm trying to recognize that I know where the suffering comes from, and the suffering could be big, could be small, right? Getting the wrong change, getting a poor job of alterations, getting the warm Coke when you want a cold one, getting the cold coffee when you ordered a hot one. That's all suffering, and if that inspires me to say, okay, HaKadosh Baruch, I know you're running my life, and I don't deserve better than this, but I need to turn things around, that's a mile of tshuva, and part of the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is that even that type of tshuva is accepted. So, Shira Malos Mimamakim Krasir Hashem, I'm calling out to you despite the fact that it's from suffering, when life is not the way I want it to be, that is nonetheless an acceptable way to approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Hashem will listen to it and accept it and respond to it. That's one thing, right? That's one thing. That's a Pashup Shat, but I think Mimamakim has something much more suggestive a few different levels of additional interpretations that can inspire our tefillah in a new way, using that word mimamakim. Number one, this is found in the Sichos of the Maggid. I'm sure many of you are familiar with the books, the Round the Maggid Table, and the Footsteps of the Maggid Speaks, Rabbi Pesach Kron, but the Maggid of Yerushalayim, Rav Shalom Shadron. And he offered the following explanation as to what mimamakim tells us. And as a remez to just to get us thinking a little more carefully, find this also in Elul Apian, Elul Yo, that there's an additional type of ma'amakim, of depths, that can be gorim tshuva besides the one that we've already mentioned. Bechetzel Sarna pointed out, there's a pasuk which sort of alludes to that type of hashkacha in a person's life. And it goes as follows. In Shir Shirim, Pasachti ani l'doldi v'doldi chamak avar, nafshi yotza v'dabro v'kashtiu v'lo mitzasiu, k'rosiv lo anoni. Shir Shirim, of course, is an allegory for a man and a woman, and they're in a relationship. But there's been some rupture in the relationship. And there's an attempt to try to bring it back together again. And the man is knocking on the door of his beloved, but she doesn't respond so quickly. And by the time she gets up to respond to the knock, the man has already left. And that's what the pasuk describes. Mitzouni hashomer masovim ba'ir hikuni b'tzouni. She goes after to try to call to him and try to chase after him. And the shomer masovim ba'ir, the guards, the police who are circulating the city, find her. Hikuni b'tzouni. And they strike her and they injure her. Nasu is redeeming Allah Shomer Hamas, and the guards of the walls have removed my jewelry, my necklace, my bracelet from upon me, meaning I've fallen to shame because I missed the opportunity. Kosh Baruch was calling to me and I didn't respond. I didn't respond. Now that description, Hikuni Pitsuni, I was hit, I was struck, and I suffered, it's not found in Eicha. Eicha is the Megillah of our suffering, of Churban. It's found in Shir HaShirim, which is the Megillah of our love song between us and Kadosh Baruch Hu. So how could it be there's a Hikuni, Ptuni, there's a suffering in the love song of Klal Yisrael on the Shir HaShirim? Yes, because a person who can see to the depths, a person who analyzes the Mima Makim, has a better perspective to understand that even that suffering is from love. And when a person is able to look more deeply and recognize things that are not always on the surface, that also opens themselves up to a different sort of inspiration. Not just the inspiration that comes from tzar, but the inspiration from noticing chesed in my life that other people miss. Mimamakim krasich Hashem, Kadosh Baruch, I'm calling out to you out of a recognition from a deep, penetrating analysis that I performed of my life, that I recognize that every inch of the way, kol mitzadei gover, every breath I take, kol neshama uneshama, kol neshima uneshima, every simple chesed that I enjoy is from you. And that also inspires a desire of closeness during the Aseres Metshuva, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I make myself available to you more than any other time of the year. Mimamakim, but I'm going more deeply than other people usually recognize. The average person takes what they have for granted, the basic blessings of their lives, their parnasa, their health, their situation as a whole, their family, and they say, these are basics that I feel almost entitled to. A person might not think that consciously, but subconsciously, we treat certain people in our lives because we take them for granted in a way which is not appropriate, even though when we reflect on it, we owe them so much. So that's true about every aspect of life. The things that we take for granted, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't have to give us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't have to give us things as simple. It could be members of our family and our family stability, for those of us who are blessed to have that. Could be our education. I met a guy yesterday, guy in YU, grew up in Santa Barbara, California. No from people there. Almost, I don't know, maybe there's a Chabad. But,
yes, sir.
What's that? He's in the Givaldic. So he was telling me, the inspiration he feels every morning when he says, Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Shelo Asani Goy. Shelo Asani Goy. As someone who, he's a self-made man. He made himself from. He made it. There have been people who have come in and out of the shir. Some people are in the shir who have made themselves from despite the direction their family was moving in. Right? And those people thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they were inspired by a Rebbe, by a teacher, someone who put them on a track that they otherwise, that they just happened to be in the right place at the right time and had a conversation with this person or connected with, or they're at a Shabbos meal. And you know what? They say, I could have easily passed that by, gone somewhere else that Friday night, and my life would be on a totally different direction. So many chassadim we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for, but only if we look deeply mimamakim, and I call out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu from a deeper look at the things that other people just feel entitled to, and I know that's my good fortune that you blessed me with. And that has to be a motivating factor in my relationship with you and desiring to come closer to you. So much so, Rabbi, that when you think about it, right, there's tshuva meyira and tshuva me'ava. Anyone know what the difference between tshuva me'ava, tshuva meyira is? Again, those seem to be the motivating factors, but what's the quality of the difference between tshuva me'ava and tshuva meyira? The Gemara says in Yuma, Aaron, what does it say? Person to tshuva meyira, out of fear, maybe something's going to happen to me, or maybe something has happened to me, I don't want it to get worse. Akiva, if a person does tshuva meyira, the Gemara says, it still has a tremendously transformative power that my averos are turned into accident. Even the things I did on purpose are turned into accidental averos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu treats it as if you didn't really mean to do it, it wasn't intentional. Yeah, Chaim, but what if I do tshuva me'ava? You know what the Gemara says? Retroactively, my averos are converted to be zechuyos. It's as if I did a mitzvah to begin with. Not just erase them from the record, but actually give them a koach, a positive force in my favor. So, could be what we revealed now is that tshuva me'ava and tshuva me'ira are not simply different starting points, but they're both on the same plane. They start at the same baseline. Just a question of what are the depths that you are coming from? Are you coming from feeling low, mima makim, and in pain, or am I using a deeper analysis to see the depths that I can be crying out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for? But we're starting all on the same plane. That's a second layer of what mimamakim means in this pasuk. There's another understanding of mimamakim. Legalio uses this as well. Chel Gimel Shin Mem Beis, the Pintel Yid, as it's called in Yiddish. There's a pure, pristine source in every person's soul, as distant as they may be from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Certainly, if we have Be'etzem Keshet to Hashem, but maybe we don't activate it as frequently or as consistently as we want to, but even someone who has very little or no connection to the Baruch Shalom, there is a deep spark that exists inside of every Jew. It tells a story about a particular person who lived in Europe, in the town, who was an absolute kofer. And everyone knew he was the town heretic. But he was about to undergo a very serious operation before his death, to save him from death. And as he was put on the table, all of a sudden he starts yelling out, "Biyadchav kudruchi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I entrust my soul in your hands," right? There's no atheist in a foxhole. When push comes to shove, even a person who denies his belief in the Ribono Shel Olam, when he realizes that he may come very close to the Ribono Shel Olam. So the Alter Mikelm said that's a moment of Mima Makim, that the spark of the neshama that's deep inside a person is exposed. The Chelek Tohar V'Kadosh that's hidden and covered sometimes, maybe very layered upon it. Every single Jew, it's there. And maybe what we're saying to the Ribono Shel Olam is, Mima Makim Krasich Hashem, I'm calling out to Hashem from that spark that's deep inside of me that maybe is not exposed and maybe doesn't show itself, but I'm ripping all of the coverings. Like the pasuk says in Nitzavim, the parsha of tshuva umol Hashem eslovav zarecha, circumcise my heart. That's the promise. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will circumcise our hearts. To circumcise means to remove that outer covering so the truth of who I am comes forward. And that is where I'm coming to you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from, because you know my true essence, you know my thoughts, you know how deeply I'm connected to you, and help me expose that part that really wants to be right up there together with you as close as possible. And finally, Rabbosai, one more aspect of Mimamakim is that Mimamakim, coming closer to how we started, Mimamakim sounds a little more suggestive of desperation. We began by talking about desperation out of suffering, but there's another type of desperation. And desperation is the wrong word only because it's really recognition. It's desperation out of a sense that I know that there's nowhere else to turn, and I know that only HaKadosh Baruch Hu can help me at this moment. When I say it's not really desperation, it's recognition, it's because, as Rav Tversky pointed out, really that's how every tefillah we say, every Shemoneh Esrei, needs to begin with the attitude of whatever I'm asking for, there is nowhere else that I can get it. Yes, I go to the doctor. Yes, I get my prescription. Yes, there's medical science that we are indebted to for our health and proper well-being. But when I make my tefillah of Rifa'enu, I'm making a statement that I need to firmly believe HaKadosh Baruch Hu, without you willing and facilitating the refuah for myself, for a loved one, whoever it is, there is zero chance that it will ever happen. My parnasa in Baruch Aleinu, and everything else that we ask for, only because you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will it, and that's why I'm coming to you to ask for it. And it's very relevant to this time of year, especially in Slichos, we use the mashal, we use the imagery of the Ani who's knocking on the door. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is poseach yadu, he opens up his hand, like the Baal Bayis and the poor man who comes knocking on his door. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is opening the door, l'dovkei b'teshuvah, to those who knock on the figurative gates of Shemayim, in order to come closer this time of year. But that imagery of the poor man and the rich man reminds me of a mashal I once heard. It's brought down slightly differently in different places, but imagine the following. There's a guy who lives in a little village, and he's suffering from poverty, and he needs to go and collect some money. And the people in the town are not so rich, so he's out of luck. He can't collect from them alone. But he hears that there's a rich man in the nearby city, and you know he's going to do his best to make the trek. He barely has enough food to get him there, but he starts on the journey. And by the time he's halfway, he's running out of food and water, and his shoes, which were already in bad shape, are starting to wear out, and there's holes in it. And he's doing the whole thing by foot. By the time he gets to the city, he's almost out of the last vestige of koach that he can muster. He finds out where this rich man lives, pushes himself to get to the rich man's door, knocks on the door. By the time the butler opens up, he's already fainted at the doorstep. They bring him in, they revive him, they give him a little water, they give him something to eat. And by the time he wakes up, the rich man who's there understands what he came for, schmoozes with him, gives him chizik, gives him everything he needs, sends him away with 5,000 rubles, and the man, Baruch Hashem, was a successful trip. He can bring back the money and support his family for the year. He comes back to the village, tells his friends, you know, the good fortune he had, and the blessing of an hatzlach he was able to receive from this rich man. And another guy who's a little bit, enterprising, sees that there's a money-making opportunity, and gets the address of the rich man from his friend, gets all the details, you know, makes sure to bring adequate food and drink, and he gets to the city, you know, in good spirits, ready to make the ask from the rich man. But then once he's there, you know, it's a big city, it's a metropolis, he says, you know, I might as well take advantage of the opportunity. There's probably other people who are here. He finds out where some other comfortable people live, knocks on some more doors until he's able to collect quite a killing. Finally makes it to the rich man to whom he was originally headed, knocks on the door, you know, waiting for the response. Butler comes to the door, meets the rich man, tells him his story, tells him his family situation, gives him a check for $18 and sends him on his way. So the guy's a little bit embarrassed, doesn't understand what happened over here. You know, altogether, he still only got a fraction of what his friend got, the 5,000 rubles. And he asks, he says, excuse me, you know, beggars can't be choosers. I'm not gonna throw it back in your face. I'm too appreciative. But explain to me why my friend was here a week ago, and he got 5,000 rubles and all he gave me was 18. So he said, you don't understand. When your friend got here, and he knocked on my door, he was out of hope. There was absolutely nothing else he could do. He came straight to my door, completely dependent upon me, looking at me, saying, you are my final and last resort. Please help me. When you put it to me like that, how can I say no? When I'm asked to step up and I'm in a position to make all the difference, of course I'm going to respond the way that I should. And I gave him everything he needed and much more. You don't need me. You clearly didn't look at me as the one who you were depending upon because you went to everybody else. So if you come to me last, okay, so I see what my position is. I'm just like everybody else, so I don't feel the need. I don't feel like I'm being counted upon more than anybody else. Same thing is true. Kadosh Baruch Hu says if you look at all the different avenues of solutions to your problems, and then you come to me last, oh, and by the way, you know, you do your lip service, Kadosh Baruch Hu will give you this and this and this, but really you're counting on everybody else, but your bitachon is lacking. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, so I'll let everyone else solve the problem. I'll give you $18, but, you know, really you can expect to hope for the solution from somewhere else because you're not looking to me like you really need me. You come to me like I'm where it's at, okay? Mimamakim krasich Hashem, I'm coming to you, Kadosh Baruch Hu, from the depths of desperation of knowing that there's nowhere else to turn. And that emun and that bitachon, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I know that you will never turn down. And those attitudes are both just a chazer. Mimamakim like Rabbeinu Yonah, out of the depths of suffering. That's one motivation for tshuva. Mimamakim from a deep, penetrating analysis of all the good that I have in my life and knowing where it comes from. Number three, mimamakim is from the depths of my being where the purity of my connection to you, Hashem, and my neshama lie. And number four, mimamakim, out of desperation, knowing that there's no one else who can give me what I'm looking for other than you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, my ultimate source of salvation and my bitachon that I am placing towards that salvation. That is the motivation. That is what's behind my tefillah.